Now I was to ask a very difficult question. It's the same difficult question I always ask. Does anyone remember anything from yesterday's class? Raise your hand if you ask for more. You wish to others, even. Oh, that's even heavier. Whatever pain you desire others to experience, you yourself will experience. Or cause, too, certainly. Thank you. Anyone else? Anything? Yes. Oh. Yes. Fulfillment of any desire, material, spiritual, it takes the Lord's sanction. Anumanta means the creator. The Prabhupada responded saying, man proposes, that means we want, God disposes. Thank you. Anyone else remember anything? Why only 1 million? Millions and millions. Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pranadhan. Yes. Yes. And this is an art, not an easy art to master. Practically speaking, it is the art of living and the art of success. Now, if Krishna allows, we shall speak about the mechanics of this process during the class. If Krishna allows. Now, where did we end in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj? We'll just go with the story now as opposed to the philosophical points. Not yet. Yeah. That was an answer, so I answered it. Because I already tend to talk so much, we'll never begin with this because end the class. Okay, not the verse, but in the story, where did we get up to? But you'll have to be the first person we call on when it's time for questions. Unless it's the question that's really essential for the... I shouldn't have said that. I knew that. Why did I do that again? Okay, go ahead. But that's not, it's clear that nothing happens outside of the will of the Lord. But if we look at everything only from that perspective, then we don't learn what Dhruva Maharaj is supposed to be learning. So there are many levels to look at everything. So we should look at it on the level that is meant for us because the Bhagavatam is spoken so and written down so we can benefit and we can learn. So that is an ultimate point. But let's hear what Dhruva Maharaj is learning so we can also learn in a similar way. Okay, so where were we up to in the story? Dhruva was, yes? Yes, that's exactly where we left off. He was so determined just on the words of his mother, that if you wish to find the Lord, great sages go to the forest to find him, and Dhruva was gone. Now, the question that we will ask is, what was driving Dhruva Maharaj? What was pushing him? We're not going to get an answer right now. But what was, because for there to be an action, there has to be a driving force. What is pushing? We all act in this world, not only us, but everyone. But there is something pushing us to act. And we sit here, and there is, of course, there is sincerity and the desire to serve and God realization and things like that. Pure, sincere thought. There are also other driving forces mixed in. So it's always interesting to consider what is it that's driving us? What is pushing us to act the way we do? Sometimes there are external forces. We have to go to school because of this reason or that reason. Or sometimes there are subtle psychological forces pushing us that we're not even aware of, the subconscious mind pushing us. We need to prove something to someone. So what was driving, pushing the engine, the powerful engine of Dhruva Maharaj, even though he was 5 years old only, to leave home in that way? What was it? But not only he didn't get what he wanted, and there are many ways to, if you don't get what you want, sometimes we get frustrated, sometimes we get detached. Dhruva neither got frustrated nor detached. What did he become? Angry. Now this is a very important point. He was angry. Angry like anything. And he wanted revenge. He wanted a kingdom. And that's what was pushing him. Now, this is not the most exalted desire. But Chatur Vidha, no? Vizante Nam Jana Sukritina. He was Sukritina. He wanted something material. But he was Sukritina. He was being pushed, his engine was being driven by a very intense desire, and the fuel, amazingly enough, if you think about it, what was the fuel, what was the emotion that was driving him more than anything else? He was angry. Now, one of the main points of this pastime is to tell us that to approach the Supreme Lord is not that we have to already be saints. Because if at the doorway there's a sign saying only perfect saints allowed entry, certainly I wouldn't be here. But this is the wonder of approaching Krishna. Whatever our situation is, we should approach Krishna. Kama sava kama va moksha kama udaradi ivrena. But we see in Dhruva Maharaj the quality of tivra, of power. And interestingly enough, as we said, the tivra means power, force. He was approaching the Lord. And that force, the driving force of the force of Dhruva, what emotion was it? Anger. So we condemn anger. Vitraga maya krodha manmaya manpasrita, giving it up, free from anger. Fear, envy. Then we attain something. But this was what was driving Dhruva. But it was driving him to Krishna. Now let's see the next step, because the scene has basically been set. The next step in this is the appearance of Narada Muni. The great sage, this is text 25. The great sage Narada overheard this news. The news, what news? That Dhruva, this little boy, had left home and compelled by his incredible desires. And he was searching for the Supreme Lord. And he was alone taking such risks. Now, the question of course can be asked, and someone did ask me yesterday, are we recommending that five-year-old children want something that we just tell them, okay, go to the forest. Or they come home from school and someone had a fight with someone and they want to, okay, go to the forest, find God in the forest. No. So what is the lesson in this? The lesson is extreme. In that Dhruva, because he was a five-year-old boy, he was completely helpless. But he was looking for Krishna. But he was helpless, and he was innocent, and he was driven by this desire. He had the quality of Sarala, simplicity. His mother told him, oh, go find the Lord, he'll solve your problem. And he was, and it sit properly in his heart because of his own piety and own purity. And he just went completely dependent on, practically speaking, mercy. So when one is 5 years old, or 105 years old, takes shelter of Krishna fully, one is actually in that same position. And this is the beginning, actually, of the process of bhakti. It is called sharanagati, or surrender, or placing oneself in Krishna's hands. And in the material world, placing oneself in the hands of another is the most fearful thing, practically speaking. Because we all know from experience that it's dangerous, because the people in this material world, you put your head in their lap and they'll chop your head off. And what do we have to go on other than our experiences, unless we hear from Shastra and what's the character and conduct of the saints, the sadhus, the devotees. So if we keep material consciousness, we will never get the result that Dhruva and the saints get. But yet, that's all we have. I mean, I shouldn't say we. That's all I have, material consciousness, material experiences. This is how we all begin. So how to get from here, this state where I'm pushing my engine, so to speak, is anger or so many mixtures of other emotions in there and so many subtle and gross ones pushing me, driving me. To the point, how do we transfer that? Change, transform that into the pure, pristine love for Krishna that is actually required to be in the Loka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. This is this part of the process is being described. There's some elements in here. The first spiritual element is entering, and that spiritual element is known as Narada Muni. So he overheard this news and understand, and this was without the internet. Because it's a more subtle system, even. And Prabhupada in his purport is going to explain the subtle system that's used. Just think of the boy left for the forest. Immediately Narada heard the news. He's going to come. There was a need, and immediately Narada comes. So understanding Narada overheard this news, and understanding all the activities of Dhruva Maharaj, he was struck with wonder. Why was he struck with wonder? He saw this boy is not perfect. He has all the ingredients. He wants. But now he doesn't want the right thing. But he wants big. We're going to find out how big his want was. He wants, and he's powerful, and he is very angry, and he is very, at this point, I will make a little later, so I won't make it now, but he's very determined. What's driving his determination? His anger. And his I want something material. That was driving his determination. Because he took, because of his piety and because of proper direction, he took shelter of Krishna. He used all those ingredients to take shelter of Krishna. The end was wonderful. Most wonderful. All wonderful. But we won't have a chance to hear it probably. But yet, Dhruva gets everything he wants and more, and he's not happy. He laments. What does he lament? He laments of the impurities of his beginning. But if we talk too much about that right now, that it's not good to have the impurities, and it's so bad, and we'll be lamenting about how impure we are, that will discourage us on the path. So this is very scientifically presented for us, so we can read it, so we can hear about Dhruva Maharaj, to see his mixed condition, emotional mixed, but having some key essential ingredients very strongly in place. And plus God's mercy, Krishna's mercy, in the form first of Narada. And this is going, all the pieces together are going to bring him success. So Narada was struck with wonder that this boy had gone to the forest to find God. Now, it's one thing to go to the forest in a romantic, heroic way to look for something, but then you get there. Then what do you do next? Excuse me? That's the problem. The lack of guidance. But Dhruva had the sincerity and the intensity of his desire And Narada Muni, on behalf of the Lord, reciprocated with him. Because exactly what happens next, after we sincerely desire, that's not exactly our business. That part is Krishna's business. Our business, our role, our duty, our responsibility is our sincerity, the honesty of our attempt. And the reciprocation with that is Krishna's business. We tend to be fearful and want to control the reciprocation also. So, okay, I'll be sincere, Krishna, as long as these specific results are guaranteed. As soon as we don't get what we want, we tend to withdraw. Mentally, physically. Do you know what I mean? Because we have a plan. We have our plan. We go, we're going to come to Krishna. Everything's going to be so nice. All my stocks will go up. And everyone will love me. And this problem will be solved. And that problem is solved. I'll never have high cholesterol. But maybe I shouldn't tell you all this. But from my experience, that's not how it works. Your cholesterol does go up and your stocks tend to go down sometimes. Okay, no one's left yet. That's nice. But the thing is that our part is the sincerity part, the sincerity of the endeavor, taking one step to Krishna. And then how Krishna deals with us. In his own very mysterious ways, his own very mysterious, all-knowing ways, that is up to Krishna. And that's one of the major tests of spiritual life. We take a step into Krishna's outstretched arms, and he holds us in any way he likes. And the test is to accept and see Krishna's mercy in that. Theoretically, very easy to say. In practice, difficult to do. Unless one is actually a devotee. There's always two alternatives to everything. We jump into Krishna's arms. He happens to have some bumble bushes in his arm. Bumble. Yes? You know what that is? Bumble. What are bumble bushes? Do you know bumble bushes? I don't know what the English translation for that is. Do you know what it is? Do they have those in South India? They're thorny. You know, there's a glue called gum arabic. And this is what they're made from, those bushes. Did you know that? In Hindi, yes. But in English, they don't call them bubble bushes. But anyway, sometimes something happens that we don't like particularly, and it feels like a thorn. And then our choice is, what are we going to do? And the tendency, of course, is to jump back and pull back as fast as we can, mentally sometimes, and physically also. But Krishna is actually so kind. Because once one sincerely wants to go to Krishna and expresses that to Krishna, he'll never, ever consciousness in the spiritual realm. So, this was somewhat a tangential point to the story. Narada was struck with wonder at Dhruva's activities. He approached Dhruva and he touched the boy's head with his all-virtuous hand. And he spoke as follows. Now, before we hear Narada's words, let's hear Prabhupada's comment on how did Narada, quote, hear the news that Dhruva, this boy hero, had gone to the forest. How did he hear the news? And it's extremely interesting. In the beginning of the Prabhupada says that Narada overheard these topics. How did he do that? Because great devotees, Narada is Trikalajya. He knows everything, past, present, and future. And he can understand the past, present, and future of everyone's heart. And therefore he understood the firm determination of Dhruva. So Prabhupada there is saying this is because he knows everything, like a super soul. And then, right after saying that, he says, it may be explained in this way. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everyone's heart. And this is how Narada knew. And as soon as he, capital He, the Supreme Lord, understands that a living entity is serious about entering devotional service, he sends his representative. So Krishna is the one who knows everything. Everything. Past, present, and future. He sent Narada as he organizes things as he likes because he knows everything, past, present, and future. For the benefit of his devotee. So therefore, it is described, as we quoted yesterday from Srila Prabhupada Sarasvati Thakur, Vishwapurna Sakayate. The devotee who is actually surrendered to Krishna, trustingly, lovingly, placing himself willingly in the hands of the all-knowing, almighty Lord, then he is living in Krishna's mercy, as Prabhupada explains. He's experiencing the touch of Krishna's all-virtuous hand upon him at all times, even in difficult circumstances. This cannot be imitated, and this cannot be bluffed. But this depth of Krishna consciousness, when we are placing ourselves fully in Krishna's hands, is what Krishna consciousness is. And we may not be at that platform at this point in our life. And we should not imitate. But at the time of death, which is a terrifying time, which is a painful time, which is compared, the pain of death is compared to the bites of thousands of scorpions simultaneously. When one is disoriented, tending to his disorientation, and everything that we rely on in our life, basically this body, this, we rely on this, and our minds and our heart beating, we're not even aware of it, but we rely on it to live, to work, to go here, to go there, to get what we want, to do what we think. Everything stops working. And even taking a breath becomes difficult. Where will our powers of depending upon ourselves even partially be at that time? And what happens to the consciousness of a man or a lady, when everything you're dependent upon and you're used to depending upon and you're habituated to depending on, what happens when it all fails you and proves completely undependable? I mean, I get angry when my car doesn't start. What happens when my own heart attacks me? That's called a heart attack, by the way. I mean, bhajan kore sadhan kore mityam janle hoy. You know what that means? It means our sadhana, our bhajan, the quality of it, whether it's real sadhana or bhajan, will be tested at the time when we leave this world. So although we can start and the door is open and Krishna's arms are welcoming us and the Hare Krishna mantra is so easy, but yet, there is a caveat that we should know, and that is that by the time we leave this world, we want to develop our relationship with Krishna, our trust with Krishna, our love for Krishna, to such a degree that when all else fails us, we can fall into his arms. And even if we're not up to that standard, but his kindness is more than millions and millions of mothers, and he will help us despite that. Not wrong verse, sorry. You knew it, but that wasn't it was the right verse for you, the wrong one for me. Which is the one? Which is the one I carry with me? Ananya Tintyantisam Yajanam Parepasate Tesam Yitivitanam Yoga Shemam Vaham Yaham Yoga Shemam. This we have to gain experience of in life. Otherwise, how are we going to suddenly, miraculously conclude, oh yes, Krishna's going to take care of me at the time when we're leaving, if we practice something completely different, if we practice completely taking care of ourselves whole life, and at the last minute we're going to be, oh yes, now it's time. I think I'm dying right now. Yes, it's 20 minutes to 12. I think I should completely, fully depend on Krishna with full faith and love and trust. Well, my heart is attacking me and I can't breathe. Very unlikely. So this is the sadhana. A sadhana of doing something for Krishna's pleasure and placing ourselves in his hands. Will he actually protect us? Will he actually? I mean, we can listen to every lecture that Prabhupada gives and he'll say yes, but will we believe it? We'll listen to every Bhagavatam class and so many of the speakers in Sri Krishna will surrender to Krishna. But will we believe it in the core of our heart to the degree that will cause us to actually depend on Krishna? No, we have to practice the principles. The Bhagavatam gives us the principles and then we have to practice ourselves learning how to apply them. And then we'll see. Let's see if Krishna's actually there or not. And does he actually reciprocate with a fallen soul like me who has called to him? Unless we trust these things. unless we see ourselves, first of all, as needing the mercy of Krishna, unless we become humble, we will not be able to depend on him in such a way that will cause him to know that, oh, here is someone who needs my help. Like the Lord told, we didn't even get up. This is the first report of the first verse. I told you, I shouldn't start. Because I'm, okay, first, and this is only the half of the purport I didn't even read. And this was the part I was supposed to read. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everyone's heart. He knows everything that you're thinking at every time. That's very frightening, isn't it? And as soon as he understands that a living entity is serious about entering devotional service, he sends his representative. In this way, Narada was sent to Dhruva Maharaj. So Krishna knows, and he's there to help. And this was the help that Dhruva needed, and this was the help that Krishna sent. He was fully armed with sincerity. But just imagine how you would feel. Just like one time I was in the Yogi temple, and I had to go to the airport. And usually Ananda Prabhu drives me to the airport, but he, as he sometimes does, is somewhere else. So there was the temple commander at that time said, oh, this devotee wants to drive you. And Ananda Prabhu is, he's such a good driver, actually. So the temple commander said, oh, he wants to drive you. And I said, is he a good driver? And he replied, he's very sincere. And I became very frightened. So Dhruva was very sincere, but he needed some good guidance, some good lessons on what to do. So Krishna immediately sent the teacher to teach him. He sent Narada Muni. And Narada spoke, and he was amazed at what? The spirit of this young boy. It wasn't pure what he wanted, but he was looking in the right place for Krishna. I mean, he was looking, Krishna was the right place. The forest wasn't the right place in one sense. But in another sense, any place is the right place because Krishna is everywhere. So he was amazed at this boy's determination. This is text 26. How wonderful are the powerful Chatins. They cannot tolerate even a slight infringement upon their prestige. Just imagine, Narada said. This boy is only a small child, yet harsh words from his stepmother proved unbearable to him. So Narada Muni said this to himself, but what a spirit this boy has. So he saw something wonderful in that spirit. If it can just, spirit means in this sense, not spirit soul, but like a psychological mood and strength. And he saw that if this spirit can be harnessed properly, in the proper way, then it can do something unbelievable. He'll be able to do anything because he has this incredible, powerful determination and spirit. So he saw that. Amidst so many faults, Prabhu, Why do you have so much prestige? We're all insignificant. God is great. You're 10. You're insignificant. You're going to die one day. On and on and on and on. He could have pulled out his Bhagavad Gita and harassed him. Or whatever, with the philosophy and tried to break his spirit. But instead, he saw something moving so powerfully and fast. And if I can just direct it properly, he'll be able to achieve wonders. And this is what he said, though, because the teacher doesn't always say exactly what he's thinking because he wants to get a particular result. He doesn't want to just tell the techniques, because if you tell the techniques, it may interfere with the workings of the psychology of the student. So he said, my dear boy, you're only a little boy. You're not a little boy. You're only a little boy whose attachment is to sports and other frivolous things. Why are you so affected by words insulting your honor? Just go out and play. So Narada, as Prabhupada explains in his purport, he says that this, usually children, you tell them one thing, you don't pay it, you tell them something good, you don't pay any attention, you tell them something they're bad, they don't pay any attention. But this boy was not ordinary. He was a warrior, the son of a king, and he had such, again, the spirit. 28. My dear Dhruva, if you feel that your sense of honor has been insulted, you still have no cause for dissatisfaction. This kind of dissatisfaction, and now he's preaching to him for a particular reason, is another feature of the illusory energy. Because the Bhagavad Gita does describe being equal in honor and dishonor. Because we have false egos, and to say that, oh, your false ego is very good or your false ego is very bad, it doesn't really have anything to do with us. This is just Maya. This is just illusion. So this kind of dissatisfaction is another feature of the illusory energy. Every living entity is controlled by his previous actions, and therefore there are different varieties of life, enjoyment and suffering. We're all going to suffer and enjoy different degrees and different situations according to what we've done in the past and how and what we've done in this life. It comes to us. And to just take this insult that has come to you because of your karma so seriously, this is just the illusory energy working. So here, we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport here. Narada Rishi, first of all, wanted to impress upon Dhruva Maharaj that he was only a child. He should not have been so affected by words of honor or insult. And this misunderstanding should have been applied. Excuse me. Narada Rishi, first of all, wanted to impress upon Dhruva Maharaj that he was only a child. He should not have been affected by words of insult or honor. And if he was so developed as to understand the difference of honor and insult, if he could actually tell, and if he was being affected by this, if his consciousness was so developed, then this understanding should be applied in his own life. He should have known that honor and dishonor are both destined by one's previous actions, one's karma. That one should not be sorry or happy under any circumstance, whatever our fate throws at us, so to speak. Take it. It has nothing to do with us. That's what Narada Muni is saying to this little boy. If you're so advanced and mature to be able to understand the difference between someone insulting you and someone honoring you, you should also understand this point. continues. The process. Now he's going to use the word process, as Prabhupada's translated here, 2 times in the verse. It's interesting what it means. The process of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very wonderful. He's going to explain a wonderful process. It's Krishna's process. And here it is. One who is intelligent should accept that process. And here it is. And be satisfied with whatever comes. Favorable or unfavorable. Because it has come by his, capital H, Krishna's supreme will. So if one wants to be satisfied, one has to basically be grateful. See what one has. The easiest way, in one sense, to become grateful is to not take anything for granted, as if you deserve any good thing you have. For example, my heart is still beating. Don't take it for granted. Be grateful to Krishna that it's still beating. I can still speak despite it's Krishna's mercy. We can go through our life, the good things in our life, and see how many blessings that we actually have by Krishna's mercy, and we can be grateful to him. And everyone's life, of course, is a mixture of good things and bad things, good karma and bad karma, fortunate and unfortunate. And we tend to see what we don't have and overlook what we do have. And if we see always what we don't have, we are always feeling that we are in want and in need, and we're always dissatisfied. And then, as Bali Maharaj told Lord Vamadev, Vamadev said, I'll give you whatever you want in charity. Bali Maharaj said to Vamadev, I'll give you whatever you want in charity. And what did Vamadev reply? What did you want? He steps in and Bali Maharaj said, I'm the king of the universe, practically. And I can give you anything. You want planets? You want villages? You want gold? What do you want? I can give you anything. And you're asking for 3 steps of land. And Vamanadeva replied, if one isn't satisfied with 3 steps of land, he won't be satisfied with the whole universe. And this is really true. I've seen this with myself. Although I haven't experienced the whole universe, but whatever it is I get, I'm not satisfied with. And I want more and more, and changing this and changing that, and on and on. And he has this, and this one has that, and I don't have this, and on and on and on and on. So this is the process of the Lord. It's somewhat a mental discipline, but this is the level that he's explaining right now. Narada is explaining it. So he's given him, so far, some very specific instructions for his own purposes, and he's discouraging him. The teacher is first discouraging the student, and in the words that Prabhupada will use later on, he's testing him. Now, the subject of testing and why Krishna tests the devotees is a very deep one, and it's a very interesting one. We'll see how we will enter into that topic a little later. So, here's Prabhupada's purport to this process of the Supreme Lord. What is the process of the Supreme Lord? Let's see if anyone... Raise your hand if you could tell me what the process of the Supreme Lord that we just discussed is. Raise your hand if you think you can do it. Okay. Raise your hand. Very good. But not very many. Bad teacher. Okay, we'll try it again. The process of the Supreme Lord is that one should be satisfied with whatever comes. Be favorable or unfavorable, because it has come by His supreme will, by His mercy, by His desire. Yes? Okay, if I ask, what is the process of the supreme Lord that Narada Muni has just explained to Dhruva? Raise your hand if you could explain it to me. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm such a good teacher. Here's Prabhupada's words. The great sage Narada instructed Dhruva Maharaj that one should be satisfied in all circumstances. Easy to say, difficult to do. But this is the process. Everyone who is intelligent, so when we say easy to say and difficult to do, and then Prabhupada says, everyone who is intelligent, and then we can understand our position. Everyone who is intelligent should know that because of our concept of bodily existence, we are subjected to suffering and enjoyment. There's just no way around it. There's nothing that anyone can do to stop the process of enjoyment and suffering from afflicting them while they are in bodily consciousness. There's no way around it. And if you don't believe me, just read the newspapers. And if you do believe me, you don't have to read the newspapers anymore. One who is in the transcendental position beyond the concept of bodily life is considered to be intelligent. One who is a devotee. Oh, this is so good. I'm going to read it very slowly. One who is a devotee. All devotees, raise your hand. Now, no one should be sure they're going to raise their hand and fall into the trap of this one. One who is a devotee, especially, accepts all reverses as gifts of the Supreme Lord. And if Prabhupada were here saying that, believe me, none of us would laugh. One who is a devotee, how is that possible? Just see what it means to be a devotee. It means to be so assured and confident and faithful in Krishna's relationship with you and your relationship with Krishna that it is inconceivable that anything could happen outside of His supreme will and jurisdiction. Because He is, after all, all-knowing and all-powerful and as kind as millions and millions of mothers. That's what it means to be a devotee. Inconceivable that something outside of Krishna's well-wishing kindness can fall upon me. When a devotee is put into distress, he accepts this as God's mercy. And He offers him, the Supreme Lord, repeated obeisances of his body, mind, and intellect. Straight from the words of whom? Lord Brahma. Tateno kampamsas, the mitzvana. What chapter of the 10th chapter? 14. Who said that? It's hard to have a good memory. Always remember Krishna and never forget Him. An intelligent person, therefore, should be always satisfied, depending on the mercy of the Lord. So Prabhupada has also equated fully intelligence with being a devotee and being out of the bodily concept of life. Text 30. Now you have decided to undertake the mystic process of meditation. Under the instructions, the advice of your mother, just to achieve the mercy of the Lord, because she had said, you please him, you get his mercy, and then you'll fulfill your desire in the kingdom. So Narada said, you're trying to attain the mercy of the Lord. So you've undertaken the mystic process to do this because your mother has instructed you in this way. But then he says, in my opinion, and this is Narada Muni, who's just appeared by Krishna's mercy in the forest and touched him upon the head with his whole virtuous hand, in my opinion, such austerities are not possible for an ordinary man. It is very difficult to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yat prasadam savai kum sam. Yat prasadam. His mercy for a living entity, for a punsa, purusha, person, dura radya. Because Aradhya Bhokshaja means that you worship and satisfy the Supreme Lord, but he, unfortunately, his mercy for a person, savai, certainly for a person, is dura radhya. Very difficult to satisfy him. And then he says, duradhyo nato maha. This is my opinion. So Prabhupada, how is Prabhupada going to teach this? Because if he says, yes, Narada Muni is right, very difficult to satisfy Krishna and get his mercy, then we'll all become discouraged. And if he says, oh, it's so easy to satisfy Krishna, then we'll all become overconfident. Oh, then I don't have to be careful. Then I don't have to perform any austerities. I can just go on with my life and Radhe, Radhe, and everything. I don't have to do anything. So how is Prabhupada going to deal with this? He says it's very easy. One problem. If he says it's very difficult, another problem. The process of bhakti yoga is simultaneously very difficult and very easy to perform. Srila Prabhupada sees that. And then he explains certain things. And then he talks about testing. He talks about testing. And he and how Narada Muni is actually testing Dhruva. And what specifically is Narada Muni testing? Because he's saying it's very difficult to do this. It's not proper. He's testing his determination. And we'll speak about this. We've already spoken about it a little bit. We'll speak about it a little bit further. And here Prabhupada will explain, in one line he explains why is it difficult and easy. But he says, for a sincere person, devotional service is very, but for one who is not determined and sincere, the process is very difficult. So, if we read in an introspective way, meaning looking at who we are and what our consciousness is like, we will become as one step in between. Yes, that's what I was thinking. We become humble. And humility causes us to take shelter. And then by Krishna's mercy, everything else occurs. Next verse. more discouragement, Narada Muni continued. After trying this process for many, many births and remaining unattached to material contamination, and by placing themselves continually in trance, many, many births, unattached to anything of this world, any material contamination, and by placing themselves continually in trance and executing many types of austerities, many mystic yogis were unable to find the end, the goal of the path of God realization. And you, this little 5-year-old boy? Then he says, text 32, for this reason, ato nivartatam esha. Nivartatam. Just stop yourself at this time. Nirbandha tava nisphala. Phal means nisphala. You will not get any fruit. You better not endeavor for this. Stop yourself at this time. Nirbandha tava nisphala. Yatashiti bhavankale. That means, come back later. In the future, you should try bhavankale. After some time, you come back. And shreyasam samupasita. And some opportunity will present itself. So come back later, and there will be an opportunity for you to present, that will present itself for you to move forward in your desire to become king and to satisfy the Lord. Go home. Prabhupada's translation. For this reason, this is the reason, so many mystic yogis for many births who are free from contamination, who kept themselves in trance continually, they still are performing austerities. They couldn't find the end, the goal of the process of self-realization. And look at you. Just stop yourself now. Avoid the difficulty and the failure that seems to be coming your way. Just stop and later on. He's testing his determination. Why? Because according to who we are, the teacher will give us one instruction or another instruction. Not just giving one instruction. Of course, there are general instructions for everyone. This is a general instruction that we get for everyone, that everyone gets. How about Chan Hare Krishna? That was the one I was thinking of as the first one. Even if someone is not even capable of following the 4 rules and regulations, still everyone. There's one time, 1967, one devotee, I think it was Jamuna Devi's sister, Janaki, had a dream. And she told her dream to Prabhupada. She said, Prabhupada, I had a dream last night that we had a kirtan that was so big, and there were so many people chanting Krishna's name, the Hare Krishna mantra, that when you said, Jai Om Vishnupad Paramhansa Hari, when you said that prayer, Hari, the whole world bowed down. And Prabhupada said, thank you for dreaming like this. That was Prabhupada's move. It was even more than that, too. As he told Zagatuli and I in the Philippines, he told us, as I've mentioned many times, he said, my desire is to make the whole universe Krishna conscious. Please assist me. That one's for all of you. You can find something to do to assist Prabhupada in his very big desire. So, we tell general instructions for everyone, the whole world, the whole universe. Chant Hare Krishna, follow the principles, etc. But then there are individual instructions that we get according to who we are, what our capacity is, what our nature is. So both are required. So he's testing. There's different meanings of the word test. When we go to school, do you ever get any tests? Do you get tests? What school is that? I want to enroll in that school. Do you
get any tests? You're too little.
Do you get tests in your school? Do you? Okay, now the truth comes out. Sometimes. I also sometimes get tests. Do you get tests? Yes. You like test? Huh? Tell the truth. The fun. He's got a very good spirit, doesn't he? When I was young, I used to think like that too. Mine are very hard. Do you always pass your tests because they're so easy? Wow. Maybe we all become like you. Does anyone pass all their tests here? Huh? It just depends who you copy from, obviously. When I was in the seventh, sixth grade in school, 12 years old, there was a test for who would become in the seventh grade in the music class. And I had two notes to see which one is higher and which one is lower. And I had no idea. And I copied. And I ended up in the music class. I still had no idea which was higher and lower. And they had me playing bassoon. And I had no idea. And I didn't do well. So don't copy. Because you end up where you don't belong. And Dhruva had no one to copy from. This test. He was all alone in the jungle with his teacher. So, in the future, why test? One reason is to find out so the teacher can understand who you are, what your capacity is, so that he can properly instruct you. Another reason for the test, and this is in the schools, this is actually one of the main reasons that they don't know this in the schools, to assess so the students can see, because I've just given a lesson. And I give a test, and the teacher can see how effective his teaching has been, whether the students have imbibed what he was teaching. Another reason for a test is so that the student can see for himself, self-assessment, can see for himself how he is doing. Say if I hear that whenever there is difficulty, I should pray to Krishna for protection. And then, as I'm walking down the street, a tiger comes, and I become very frightened, and I forget all about Krishna, and then you can understand this was Krishna's test, because now I can see that I did the wrong thing when I was afraid. So it means a bad student, when there is a test and he fails, what does he do? He blames the teacher. And a good student understands, oh, I need some more work in this particular area. And it's the good student who improves, and it's the bad student who doesn't improve because he sees the problem always is outside of himself. Generally, Prabhupada says in his purport, people think that childhood, this is in regard to the tests, is meant for enjoying life by engaging oneself in, when one's a child, one should be, one's constitutional natural dharma is to sport and play. Generally, people think like this. And generally, people think that youth is meant for enjoying the company of young boys or young girls. And then when one becomes old, at the time of death, then he may try to execute devotional service or some mystic yoga process. But this conclusion is not for devotees who are actually serious. The great sage Narada is instructing Dhruva Maharaj just to test him. He's telling him to go home to see what this boy is really made out of. What does he really want? Actually, the direct order from Prahlad Maharaj is that from any point of life, Komaram, Achilet, Prabhyo, Daman, Bhagavatan, Iha, any point of life, soon as one wakes up to the facts, to reality, from any point of life, one should then begin rendering devotional service. But it is the duty of the spiritual master to test the disciple to see how seriously he desires to execute devotional service. Then he may be initiated, and then he may be engaged according to who he is and what his capacity is. When we tell devotees when they first come to the temple and they think this is very nice, so people come, we don't immediately say, chant 16 rounds a day and follow the four regulations. You like this? Chanting Hare Krishna is so nice, do this. No, we say, well, you chant 2 rounds a day, come and associate with the devotees, like that. But someone is awake, as soon as one becomes awake to what is reality is, then immediately we should render devotional service. 33. So Narada continued to test him. And this is what he said. Now, the instructions Narada Muni is going to give him are not the instructions really for Kshatriya. These are Brahmin instructions. There's two verses of Brahmin instructions. Because and this does not exactly having to do with devotees, but not exactly not having to do with devotees either. But the idea is that different persons get their happiness in different ways and feel satisfaction in different ways. They're all individuals. Some of us like salty preparations, some of us like sweet preparations, some of us like sweet and sour preparations. We're all individuals. Bitter, hot, no. My doctor told me no chili. And these, of course, give away loads of material nature that affect us also. When we find our happiness, and this is what the Bhagavad Gita teaches in the 14th, 17th, 18th chapters. Yes, the qualities of everything becomes affected. And actually, it describes in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that even the water we drink affects the modes of material nature that are influencing us. So he's going to give him instructions for those who wish happiness in the mode of goodness. And he says, and not in passing, and we'll see how the instructions of Narada is going to give him reacts with Dhruva's modes at this particular time. He says, one should try to keep himself satisfied in any condition of life, whether in distress or happiness, similar to what he said before, which is offered by the Supreme Will. Because the person in the mode of goodness is basically self-satisfied. He's not looking for his satisfaction outside in things. So whatever happens, anyway. This is Krishna's arrangement. A person who endures in this way is able to cross over the darkness of meshes very easily. So Prabhupada says in his purpose, this is how to view the reverses in life. He says, instead of being attached to the circumstantial happiness and distress, which ultimately is the result of pious and impious activities that we perform, if we want to get out of the clutches of this nescience, that's such a good English word, clutches. The clutches of nescience, within the vice-like, claw-like grip of ignorance. Instead of going up when something good happens to us, going down when something bad happens to us, whatever position we are put in by the will of the Lord, we should accept that. We should say, I deserve this and have so much to be grateful for. I can still have a tongue and an ear. I can chant. I can hear. Still have devotees to associate with. Thus, if we simply surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and this is one of the main principles of surrender, this is actually the angi, the main, substantial principle, and everything else are the angas or the parts, is acceptance. Depend on Krishna. Always, for his protection, whatever situation we're in. So if we do this and surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we should get out of the clutches of this material existence. How can I serve you in this situation? How can I please you in this difficult situation? Instead of always thinking about me and whether this is convenient or inconvenient for me, remaining fixed as a servant of Krishna always, whether the situation is favorable externally or unfavorable externally. If we just think, surrender to Krishna, Krishna, how can I please you now? Then there's no false ego. Then we're in our real identity as Krishna's servant. So there has to be detachment from the externals of the happiness and distress and a surrender. Not just become stoic. Stoic means, okay, this has happened, I tolerate. Good happens, I tolerate it. Bad happens, I tolerate it. But a devotee is not like that. Although tolerance is part of what he is, it's surrender which defines what a devotee is. How can I please you, Krishna, in this circumstance? Putting Krishna in the center. That is what Sharanagati is. Surrender, returning to our center. Of true nature. And then the second part of his instructions, the happiness and the mind of goodness, which are part of the test, but they are very true nevertheless. Every man should act like this. Every man meaning every person. When he meets a person more qualified than himself, he should be very pleased. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur's core adds that we shouldn't be. We should treat our superiors with respect and not the enemies of the superior. We should when we meet someone less qualified than ourselves, we should be compassionate towards him. And what we shouldn't be is oppressive. We should oppress them and lord it over them. And when we meet someone equal to ourselves, we should treat them, we should make friendship with them. And not, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, get proud. If someone acts in this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of this material world. Now Dhruva is going to reply to this good advice. He says, My dear Narada, my dear Lord Naradaji. Ji is placed after a name. What is the mood that comes along with that? Respect, Naradaji. He's being very respectful. But for a person whose heart is disturbed by the material conditions of happiness and distress, whatever you have so kindly explained for attainment to peace of mind is certainly very good instructions. But as far as I am concerned, because happiness comes from what mode of material nature? Happiness comes from what mode of material nature? See, this is our problem. We think happiness comes from the mode of passion. With passion, what comes from passion is distress. Actually, the result of the mode of passion is distress, and the result of the mode of goodness is happiness. But as Shri said, this, your instructions are very good for someone who wants peace of mind and either happiness or distress, controlled by either passion or ignorance. But as far as I am concerned, listen to this, I am covered not by passion and not by goodness, but ignorance. And therefore, why is he saying I'm covered by ignorance? Yes, because he's so angry. And that is what's driving the whole machine of his life at this point, that's driven him out of the palace. Driven him out of the palace and put him into the forest because he's angry and he wants a kingdom and he wants it fast. Because he's so angry because he's been insulted by his mother. Stepmother, mother, and his father didn't say anything. And anger is born out of which mode of material nature? Ignorance. Because, okay. Yes, but why is anger ignorance? Because, I'll tell you my own. Goodness, your consciousness is peaceful and it expands. When you, of course, none of you have this experience, but when you become angry, your consciousness becomes very focused and you see only one thing. Therefore, when people get angry, you can kill someone. They forget everything else. In anger, they'll take out a gun or a knife and do something or break down the house and things like that. Because of anger, they forget everything. But their consciousness only is aware of one thing. I'm so angry in this person. And why are you laughing at me? I'm insulted. I'm going to go into the forest. In about 2 minutes. It's too cold. But as far as I'm concerned, I am so angry. I'm not covered by passion. I'm not covered by goodness. I'm covered by ignorance. And this kind of philosophy does not touch my heart. Prabhupada says, he's putting this in perspective that please, and I spoke about this earlier, but usually one thinks that, and as he just said, that when one is about to die because one can't fulfill one's material desires anymore because he's about to die, that's the time to take shelter of the Lord or some completely pure soul. He can take shelter of the Lord. But here, Dhruva is showing, and Prabhupada says, even those who have material desires, it is not true that those with material desires are prohibited from worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the essential instruction from the life of Dhruva. He frankly admitted that his heart was full of material desires. He was very much affected by the cruel words of his stepmother, whereas those who are spiritually advanced do not care about anyone's condemnation or adoration. You are so wonderful, you are so terrible. I'm not concerned with pleasing everyone. You're concerned with pleasing Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita, it is said that persons who are actually advanced in spiritual life do not care for the dual behavior, the duality of this material world. Dhruva Maharaj frankly admitted he was not beyond the afflictions of material distress and happiness. He was confident that the instructions given by Narada were valuable, yet he knew he could not accept them. So the question raised here is whether or not a person afflicted by material desires is fit to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada gives the answer. The answer is that everyone is fit to worship him. Even if one has many material desires to fulfill, he should take to Krishna consciousness and worship the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is so merciful, and we'll all like this, and he fulfills everyone's desires. Through this narration, it will become clear that no one is barred from worshiping the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, even if one has many material desires. And then Jesus continues, Tati me avinitasya, therefore, the reason I am avinitasya, I am not very submissive, is that I am kshatriya, kshatram gorum apashisaha, that I am a kshatriya, I achieve this nature, and I am very, by nature, I am very intolerant. This is due to my kshatriya birth, and I have imbibed this nature fully. And Sarucha Durvacho Banar, she spoke the Durvacha, such bad, harsh words to me. Na Bine Sayate Rigi. Bine means pierced. And my heart, Riddhi, has been pierced by her harsh words, and I cannot get them out and remain there. Vishwanath Thakur Thakur comments. There's so many, his comments are always so wonderful, actually. He says, he says, that I am a kshatriya. Oh. Oh, yes. Let the weak, cowardly Brahmins drink the nectar of your instructions on how to become peaceful. I am a kshatriya prince with fierce bravery. I cannot even glance at your instructions. Is that what you were expecting? Now, what are the qualities of a kshatriya? Oh, students of the Bhagavad Gita. Sauryam, powerful. Tejo, strength. And what's the next one? Gitti. Determination. Virya, strength. And then? Courage in battle. And then, what is courage in battle? Soyam. Whoops. We all need some revision on our Bhagavad Gita verses. Soyam dhikir, natoyam virya dhikir dhaksam. Dhanam is... Oh, okay, anyway. Charitable, dhriti, courageous, the heroic, have Ishwara Bhav, the mood, the heroic, Kshatriya's charisma. But they have dhriti. And that dhriti or determination, one of his Kshatriya nature, is going to prove so valuable to him. He holds something. He holds onto something, a principle, a desire, even his material desire, and he's not going to let it go. And he's taken shelter of Krishna to get that material desire, and he's not going to let it go. A fierce, Kshatriya, perfected determination, and it's going to bring him right to the lotus feet of the Lord. Dhriti. Determination. Prabhupada's purport will send me to all. We shall read some. It is said that the heart or mind is just like an earthen pot. Once broken, like in India, we have seen so many earthen pots. It would be good to do a practical demonstration here and have a pot and throw it in the air. And it's not like when it falls to the ground and shatters that we can piece it back together again. The heart is like an earthen pot. Once broken, it cannot be repaired by any means. Dhruva Maharaj gave this example to Narada Muni. He said that his heart, having been pierced by the arrows of his stepmother's harsh words, felt so broken that nothing seemed valuable to him other than his desire to counteract her insult. His stepmother had said that because he was born from the womb of Samiti, the neglected queen of Maharaj Vitanapada, Dhruva Maharaj was not fit to sit either on the throne or his father's lap. In other words, according to his stepmother, he could not be declared king. Dhruva Maharaj's determination, therefore, was to become king of a planet more exalted, more glorious, even beyond that possessed by Brahma, who is the greatest of the demigods. And what was Lord Brahma's realm? He was the controller of the whole universe. So now he was thinking very big. He wanted a kingdom bigger than the universe. He was a child. I want a kingdom bigger than everything. The whole universe. I want it, and I'm determined. And I'm going to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, and he is so great, so powerful. He can give me whatever I want. And we'll say, even though it's impossible, how could you have a kingdom more than everything? His faith was simple. And his determination was fixed. O learned Brahmana, this is the next to last verse, I want to occupy a position more exalted, bigger than any yet achieved within the three worlds by anyone, even by my fathers and grandfathers. If you will oblige, I don't want these other kind of instructions that will tell me how I should become peaceful. I want an instruction that's going to tell me how I can have a kingdom bigger, better than everything. If you will oblige me, kindly advise me on an honest path to follow by which I can achieve the goal of my life.
What a spirit he had. What a spirit. Not practical. He was 5 years old. But we'll talk about this in a moment. But what did he have? He had this huge desire. And he had this incredible determination. And his desire was burning, burning, burning in his heart. So fiercely, it was so ablaze that nothing else existed there. Except this one desire. And he was determined. And there was one other, the most mystical. And that's what he brought. And then he brought the desire that was burning. And he brought that determination due to his birth, as he said. But he took them all. And this is what makes Dhruva so glorious. He took it all, those two other ingredients, in and of himself, they won't give you anything. What are the two other ingredients? What are the two ingredients we already mentioned? What's one? The desire, but not just desire like a child. We tend to be like children in the supermarket or a toy store. If you want to touch your child, bring them to Toys R Us. Because, I want this and I want that. And when the children are in the supermarket, the parents, all have to do is distract them. They're looking this way and the parents say, oh, look at this over here. Look at this over here. And then the child will say, oh, no, look at this over here. And distracting one to the next so that their attention doesn't focus on anything. And if it does, they start to cry and throw a tantrum. I'm giving away all your secrets, aren't I? I want to be Krishna devotee. I want to go back home, back to Godhead. I want to go to Goloka Vrindavan. I want to do this. I want to do that. And then Maya throws something, some glitter on something. Lights come. Oh no, I want that. And then we forget that one. Oh, I want that. And now I can do that. I want my own deities, and I want my this, and now I'm going to chant so many rounds, and then I'm going to do this, and then I need this. Like little children, Dhruva wasn't like that. He had one thing in his mind, and he wasn't going to move on it. But yet, the desire burning, and it was burning in Dhruva. And now we can begin to glimpse, I'll read something a little later that will bring everything in perspective. Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cry and cry in hearing about Dhruva? His situation was hopeless. I want a kingdom bigger than everything. Bigger than, more wonderful than anything anyone else who ever existed ever achieved. But he was bringing to it his determination. He didn't want anything else. He wouldn't be distracted. Narada tried his best to distract him, to see what was really in his mind, because depending upon what type of a consciousness he had, that would determine the type of instruction he would give him. Would he give him the instruction that was so difficult to perform, that would give him what he wanted? He wouldn't do that unless he was 100% determined. Because why? He would fail. Why give him an instruction that he's going to fail at? He'd become discouraged and then go home thinking himself a failure. Better to go home first and come back later. Be ready. And Prabhupada actually said this. He got tired in Australia of devotees moving in the temple and then moving out of the temple and moving in and moving out. Sort of the Westerner musicalness of adopting something because it's going to be fun. Oh, this is going to be so nice. I'm going to,
chant Hare Krishna and eat Mahaprasadam all day long. What a nice life. And then in and out. And Prabhupada said, no, just let them stay at home and read the books until they become fixed and know what they really want. Then. So that was the third ingredient that really brings it together. And that was, he took all this to the lotus feet of Krishna, who is so great that he could satisfy all these unreasonable childish desires. Compassionately, like hundreds of thousands and millions of loving mothers. The mother sees the good. Those three ingredients were the success formula that Dhruva used. He had, and plus add Narada for the instructions. And he was going to get it. But yet, amazingly enough, and we won't speak about this today, he's going to lament. Even that's pretty much it. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one line of his purport, because he was a Kshatriya, he said, he wanted this. He said, teach me that path alone, and you will see my courage in attaining that in no time at all. That's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, knowing the mind of this boy who is not a boy. In the final verse, dear Lord, he said to Brahma, excuse me, Narada, you are a worthy son of Lord Brahma. This is actually quite interesting. Nunam, certainly, Nunam Bhavan Bhagavato, certainly, Bhavan, your good self, your honor, Bhagavata, you are of the Lord. Yo Angaja, you were actually born directly from Narada's body, from Lord Brahma. Parameshtina, you were born directly from my Lord. Oh, you are of the Supreme Lord. Oh, Bhagavata, you were born directly of Lord Brahma. Vitudan Atate Vinam, you travel all over the universe. Playing on your vina, hitaya jagato arkavat. You are like the sun, hitaya. Hitaya means doing welfare work. So you travel like the sun, from place to place, playing on your vina, oh your lordship, oh glorious devotee, just doing good for the world, for everyone in the world. Prabhupada's translation. Dhruva Maharaj, excuse me, my dear Lord, you are a worthy son of Lord Brahma. And you travel playing on your musical instrument, the vina, for the welfare, you travel for the welfare of the entire universe. You are like the sun, which rotates in the universe for the benefit of all living beings. So he's applying also some honey upon his tongue. Because, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, you are doing the welfare for everyone in the world, and I am also in this world. So So you should give me what I want, too. And what I want is, of course, the instructions from you on how I can achieve this incredible desire. The second paragraph. The example of the sun is very significant. The sun is so kind that he distributes his sunshine everywhere without consideration. Dhruva Maharaj requested Narada Muni to be merciful to him. He pointed out that Narada travels all over the universe just for the purpose of doing good to all conditioned souls. Dhruva requested that Narada Muni show his mercy by awarding him the benefit of his particular desire. Dhruva Maharaj was strongly determined to fulfill his desire, and it was for that purpose that he had left his home in the palace. So we shall end here. Dhruva Maharaj ki jai, Sri Narada Muni ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai. So we end at 1 o'clock, and now it's 10 of 1, so there's a few minutes of questions, if anyone has any questions. Just wait till things settle down a moment. Let me ask you a question. What struck you most from this? Think first. And if you have something you'd like to share, raise your hand, please. What struck you most from this? Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. Being satisfied, the importance of being satisfied with what you have. What causes us to not be satisfied with what we have? We keep one from mode of person. Passion causes the increase of desires and distress, says the Bhagavad Gita. How to apply that? We try to act as much as possible in the mode of goodness. We try to cultivate sattva-gun. But being pure and free from all material contaminations is not a hindrance to our taking devotional service. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, what struck you most? Thank you. Yes. Anyone else? Yeah, why don't we? Do you want a this one? We can. Anyone else? You want? Yes? Yes. Yes, if you want to.
Thank you.
Did she say that? Wait. My specific question is, what struck you from this class?
His achievement if he had power.
Why?
He had power.
Yes. Why would he minimize his achievement?
Because he would be satisfied with, never mind.
Why would it have minimized his achievement?
Because he wouldn't have had that intensity of focus,
because
determination.
Yes, it wasn't him. He couldn't do it. Mm. He wouldn't be him anymore. So spiritual life means that we keep who we are, where we are, and move in the closest, the quickest practical way towards the goal, but according to who we are, because we can't move according to who we're not. So in other words, say I'm in this position, and the goal is over here. So because I have this material desire, perhaps I have to go like this to the goal. Maybe I can't go like this, but I have to go like this. It's fine, because the goal has been ascertained, and I'm moving in the best practical way. And spiritual life means to be moving towards the goal. And the teacher's definition of a student is doing well is that they're progressing. So the first principle is don't live your life in such an opposite a way that you go opposite to the goal. That's the first principle. And then you move towards the goal. So for Dhruva Maharaj to adopt this method was impossible. But he was so determined, he achieved it so quickly like this. The real question is, what would the method of someone, is it possible for someone who didn't have a burning material desire to go even quicker? And the answer is in why Dhruva was lamenting at the end. Because Krishna fulfilled his material desire. So it's not that we should take that spiritual life means trying to be good. I'm a murderer and I'm going to be the best murderer in the whole world, or a bank robber, or even a... Or, it does, or be silly in one sense, but it has to be the... But the center is the point. The center is the point. And that's what Dhruva really learned, and that's what he ended up lamenting about. Because I was using the center for my purpose. The center is Krishna. And then when he got his purpose, he was just lamenting and lamenting and lamenting, because he saw the beauty of the center of Krishna himself. And he was touched by love for Krishna. And then he thought, I was looking for glass and overlooking the jewel. So yes, of course, who's going to say, especially what mother is going to say with your children present, that we shouldn't all try to do, you know, do whatever we're doing very, very well. But don't stop at saying that. Say that in such a way that Krishna is pleased. And that will include doing it to the best of your capacity, but it will include, it will be something so much more.
When you spoke then, you mentioned that desire and he's talking about the goal being Krishna. But in Dhruva Maharaj's case, his desire wasn't to please Krishna, his desire was to get the goal, and his goal wasn't that. So he worked very hard with a strong determination to get another goal. And when he got that goal, as you pointed out, he wasn't so happy with the goal, even though he was given it. He saw the weakness of it.
Yes, exactly. Now, I would like to read the secret message of this. Let's see if this is it. No? 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 If I didn't bring it, the secret message will remain a secret. Yes. Yes. Now, yes. This is what I was looking forward to saying. Not that I wasn't looking forward to saying what I said. There's a very mysterious chapter of the Bhagavatam. I'll tell you what canto it is. It's the seventh canto. And the very mysterious chapter of the seventh canto that I'm referring to is what number? Oh, good. No one's into guessing games. Oh, nice. It's the first one. Huh? That's pretty safe. Well, then again, it could be between 10 and 15. But it's one. It's the very first. Now, it's a very mysterious chapter because Yudhisthira asked Narada Muni a question. Yudhisthira, in the Rajasuya sacrifice, has seen something quite amazing. This person, whose name was Shishupal, blasphemed Krishna. He criticized Krishna not once, but twice, but not even 10 or 99 times, but 100 times there. And very interesting also, that Shishupal criticized Krishna after the Agra Puja, after Krishna was already worshipped. Did you realize that? Did you notice that? Krishna was already worshipped. It had already been done. And then Shishupal began his criticism. Our acharyas explain why. Is because he wanted to start the argument there. Because if it was before, they would have decided, someone would have won or whatever, and you know, they would have decided, and then the sacrifice would have begun. But as soon as the Agra Puja was completed, it's the initial part of the sacrifice. So it's officially begun then. And what he wanted to do was disrupt the whole sacrifice. So he wanted an argument to take place, and if blood was shed, that would even be better, because then the whole place would be contaminated and the sacrifice would be a failure. And you just wouldn't be able to perform the rest of Suya sacrifice. Very clever. Yes? He ended up, Krishna killed him, and his head, chopped off his head in such a way that blood was spilt when he was chakra, because Krishna is even more clever. But still more wonderful than this intriguing fact was that when the soul who was giving life to Shishupal's demonic body, left the body, everyone saw, and Yudhisthira saw, that it entered into the body of Krishna. So if we read the third canto of the Bhagavatam, we know that the soul was one of the giant Vijayadantavakra. But Yudhisthira asked the question of why it was that this demon who was just criticizing Krishna achieved this wonderful result of Suyujimukti, of merging into the body of Krishna? How did he achieve this exalted result by acting demonically? He asked that question to Narada Muni. And this question, in Vishwanath Chakravarti talk, because one comment will explain very much the process of the Dhruva used, and it will give us hints to the process of how, if we want success in devotional service, how we have to practice. So there are some verses, five verses, and then I'll read one purport by Vishnu. He said, it all has to do with the consciousness. Absorption, where your consciousness is absorbed. By devotional service, and it's very mysterious. So if you like mysterious things, listen carefully. If you don't, you can all go to sleep. By devotional service, one cannot attain such intense absorption in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one can through enmity towards him. That is my opinion. And we all have this experience too. When we're angry at someone, do we have any problem always thinking about them? We keep them out of our mind and they won't come right back. And the more strong our enmity is with a person, the more they live in our mind. And we have to remember to remember Krishna. And we don't have to remember our enemies. So he said, by devotional service, one cannot achieve such intense absorption in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one can through enmity towards him. Narada Muni says, that is my opinion. And he gives an example. A grass worm, a particular type of worm, is confined in a hole of a wall by a bee. It's a particular type of a wasp that grabs these worms and puts them, you know, makes a hole, nest in the hole of the wall and seals it up for a while. And then he comes back and kills him and drinks his blood. So a grass worm who's confined in the hole of a wall by a bee, he always thinks of the bee in fear and anger, enmity, and later he becomes a bee simply because of such remembrance. Similarly, if the conditioned soul somehow or another think of Krishna, who is Satchidananda Vigraha, they will become free from their sins. Whether thinking of him as their worshipable Lord, or even as their enmity, enemy. Because of constantly thinking of him, they will regain their spiritual bodies. Many, many persons have attained liberation simply by thinking of Krishna with great attention and giving up sinful activities. This great attention may be due to lusty desires, mystical feelings, fear, affection, or Vaidhi Bhakti, devotional service. I shall now explain how one receives Krishna's mercy simply by concentrating his mind upon him. My dear King Yudhisthira, the gopis by their calm, Kamsa by his fear, Sisupala and other kings because of their envy, and the Yadus by their family relationship with Krishna, and you Pandavas by your great affection for Krishna, and we, the general devotees, by our Vaidhi Bhakti, our devotional service, we have all obtained the mercy of Krishna. Somehow or another, one must consider, focus one's mind on, become absorbed in the form of Krishna very seriously. Then, through one of the five different processes mentioned above, one can return home back to Godhead. So, what is he saying here? He's glorifying what? Being an enemy of Krishna? And if anyone wants to take initiation from the Shishupal Sampradaya or the Kamsa Sampradaya, sorry, it doesn't exist. He's not glorifying being envious of Krishna or angry at Krishna. What's he glorifying? Being fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And he's also saying something else. First of all, before we discuss something else, let's just mention that what was Dhruva Maharaj's, he was so determined, his desire for the kingdom was driving the engine of his actions, and he took shelter of the Lord with that determination. He was using the Lord to get what he wanted. But he was so much, that dhriti that caused him full, and we'll hear about that perhaps tomorrow, if we read that section tomorrow, we'll hear about the full absorption that he attained by following the instructions of Narada, driven by that desire. Such intense and full absorption in the form of Krishna that he became as heavy as Krishna, because became one with Krishna in the sense of fully consciousness was fully absorbed in him. And therefore, because of his full absorption in thoughts of Krishna, he attained something that was impossible. And Krishna was so pleased with him, and he was so purified, and he was fully freed from contamination because of his fully concentrating his consciousness in full absorption in Krishna's form. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, comments on this verse. I'll just read part of his comments on the first of these verses. You criticize enmity with Krishna, thinking that such practice was terrible in Sisupal. Naturally. And others who have that. Whereas I, in this verse, praising that enmity is more than bhakti, which is the best of all practices. Why? Assuming that Sisupal and others will have a hellish end, and although their inimical attitude is criticized on the path of Bhava, it is praised more than the purifying power of bhakti in one aspect only. Its power to produce quick absorption in thoughts of the Lord. So this one quality of being absorbed in the Lord is so wonderful. That Sisupal was carrying so many abominable qualities along with that one absorption, the one wonderful quality. So therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, of course, then how much more, if I'm praising Sisupal's quality of absorption, how much more when I praise the parental affection of Vasudev, the friendly relationship of others, what to speak of Nanda and others' relationship, which are respected on the path of bhav, which cause extreme absorption in the thoughts of the Lord at every moment. This is hinted at in this verse. So this is called Kamutya Nyaya. If this is so wonderful, what to speak of? And to make the point even stronger, I would like to quote Lord Brahma again. We've already heard from Lord Brahma indirectly by Prabhupada quoting Tatayana Pampamsu Samiksman, indirectly quoting that. But Lord Brahma after observing Braja, as Krishna was playing with the cowherd boys and the calves, and Brahma didn't understand who Krishna was. How could he understand that the all-powerful, unlimited Lord was wandering around Braja with his shoes like a village boy, holding yogurt and rice and fruit mixed together in his left hand? He doesn't even have enough culture to keep it in his right hand the food that he's going to eat. A village boy, and he's the supreme personality of Godhead, the all-powerful Lord, universes are coming from his skin. How could he understand this? This little boy. So he played a trick on Krishna and stole away the boys and the calves and hid them in a cave. Then he came back in a moment of his time, this was 1 year later, and he saw that all the boys and the calves were still there. So he went to the cave where he had hidden them, and he saw that the boys and the calves were still in the cave. So he came back, and he saw that the boys and the calves were still with Krishna. And then he looked at the boys, he looked at the calves, he looked at Krishna, and all the boys and the calves started assuming four-armed Narayan forms. And universes were coming from them. And they were covered with tulsi leaves from the tip of their toes to the top of their heads. And every living entity in existence was worshipping these Narayan forms. And these Narayan forms were going in and out of the body of this little boy who was holding the food in his left hand without shoes and standing there very innocently and beautiful. So Brahma then spoke some wonderful prayers. Wonderful prayers. And I would just like to mention in passing one of them, and then I'll read another. He said, there is so much difference between your body and mine that I can't even estimate it. Let others say that they know something about God, but I will not say anything. I will not raise my hand. And Burizan said, raise your hand if you know something about God. Brahma had just experienced this. And then another thought came to his mind, which came out of his mouth in the form of a prayer. Because if he, Krishna, is so powerful like this, then who are these boys and calves? And what is their relationship with him? Because he saw that they're thinking about him in such love, their consciousness is fully absorbed in love for them, for Krishna, 24 hours a day, and they can't think of anything other than Krishna. They can't. No other thought. No other thought enters their consciousness other than how to please Krishna. And Krishna's doing this. And he's walking through the fields. And he might step on a sharp little root. And his skin is so tender that even if a leaf falls on it, it becomes reddish in color. And he plays his flute in this way. And the cows love him. And he calls the calves and the cows by their names. And he walks on Govardhan Hill. And on and on and on. And he's stealing butter. And he's doing this, and he's feeding it to the monkeys, and he's doing the naughtiest things, and the people of Braj are just thinking and talking about him non-stop, continuously, and only because their love for Krishna has filled their consciousness, and they're fully absorbed in that only. So then he says, thinking about this, and then he thinks about the first demon Kamsa sent to Vraja and that Krishna killed. And who was that? Putana. And then he thought of how Krishna reciprocated with Putana because she came in disguise as a mother. And he made her a Dhatri. Stanakutam Dhamsi So he thought, so God is thinking, because he has four heads, what is that called again? Quad four? Chip? No, not that. Intel quad four? Quad core. He had quad core multitasking facilities. So he immediately thought, now what's going to happen if Krishna reciprocates with Putana in this way, giving himself to her, bringing her to the spiritual world, then how is he going to reciprocate with the Vrijabasis who love him? I can't think of anything but him. So therefore, considering this, his quad core crashes. And he loses all his data because he forgot to back up. Unfortunately, Kunti was there, and he had this. No. So Brahma, considering this, he says, my mind becomes bewildered, trying to think of what reward, other than yourself, can be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Braj. You give them everything. You give them yourself. You give them everything. And you are the embodiment. You are the sum total of all benedictions. All benedictions come from you. So you give the residents of Vrindavan yourself. But you have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her simply disguising herself as your devotee. So you give yourself to the residents of Vrindavan, and you gave yourself to Putana, who only disguised herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, whose wealth, whose friends, whose dear relations, whose bodies, whose children, and whose very lives and hearts are dedicated to you with love, only to you. If you give yourself to Putin in this way, what do you give to the resonance of Vrindavan? So Vishwanath Chakravarti took over the comment. First he says Brahma's words. Perhaps you don't want to say, if I can attain the dust of your feet, the dust of the inhabitants of the feet of the inhabitants of Braja, because he's asked for that. But please answer one other thing that I'm now asking. What reward can you give the inhabitants of Braja? That is the question I ask you. Krishna replies, Brahma, though you are knowledgeable of the meaning of the Vedas, why is it that you can't understand the answer to this question? Brahma, our minds, not only mine, but also the minds of Lord Shiva and the four Kumaras and others, they are bewildered about this. And what is the state of our minds? Our minds have become bewildered trying to think of what type of reward you could give them from any place, any time, anywhere, as you are the final reward. You are the Vishwafal. You are the reward of the whole universe. And you have already given yourself, which is the final reward, as their son. For all eternity. Now seeing how they're acting, what will you give them in response now? You're already their son. You're already their friend. Now what will you give them? Seeing how they're to reciprocate. And you've been doing this, you have been giving them yourself as their son since and friend, etc., since eternity forever. So now what will you do? What will you build? If there is some other thing that you have that's worthy of giving, you should give it to them. But there is nothing else you could give them because you've already given them yourself. Therefore, that is why our mind is bewildered. So Krishna says, "Oh Brahma, you are really ignorant of the truth. Knowing that they would manifest such astonishing, spontaneous, loving devotion of service to me, I knew that they would do this. And because of that, I knew they would do it, since I knew everything. I have in advance paid them. I have in advance given myself to them as their son. And they are satisfied with this. I am knowledgeable about what to do in the future also. In this way, my argument has defeated your bewilderment." Rama says, "Oh Krishna, if you talk like this, this is how I answer. You are certainly doing what is proper. But although Putana was sinful, just by imitating a devotee, she and all her family attend you personally. So if you're saying that I have given myself to the residents of Vrindavan personally, knowing what they do in advance, something doesn't seem right here. But the inhabitants of Raja, who gave up all attachment, such as house, wealth, friends, any object they had, body, their minds even, he gave these things all to you out of great affection. If they also attained you only, and Putana also attained that same thing as you, same person, the same body that you have given to the low sinful Putana, you also gave to the most exalted jewel-like inhabitants of Praja. This, in essence, is highly improper. Therefore, I have concluded that you are forever indebted to the residents of Vrindavan." That is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. And Krishna himself has said this when he says, "Na paryeham," to the gopis, "I am your debt, I cannot repay you." So in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the unlimited, all-powerful Lord, he becomes defeated by the bhakti, the devotion of the residents of Vraja. He cannot repay them. He is so magnanimous, but he runs out of capital and remains forever in their debt. He cannot even give himself to them as an equal payment, or an equal, not payment, but reciprocation for their love, because he even does that. He's so magnanimous, like hundreds and millions of mothers. He's so generous-hearted, giving. He even reciprocates like that with Putana, giving so much more. So how does he reciprocate with the residents of Vrindavan? He cannot equal the reciprocate of them. He remains forever indebted to them. This is the Supreme Lord. He becomes the servant of his devotees. He's not a dictator sitting on a throne somewhere, you know, saying that you have to do this or you're going to go to hell. And if you don't do that, you're going to suffer. And if you're good, I'm going to give you some good rewards. Everyone's just praying for him, that the food to him, that the food bowl shouldn't come to me, but it come to him. But not me, and the good things come to me and my family. And yes, he's sitting there, yes, 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 I will do that. And if you're not good, and everyone's saying sweet things to him because they're afraid. This is not our Krishna. This is not Srila Prabhupada's Krishna. This is not the Krishna of that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so magnanimously revealed. He revealed the process of attaining a relationship with Krishna. He puts the Supreme Lord forever as the servant of his devotees. This is Vajrabhakti. This is what Mahaprabhu came to give us. But it takes a very burning desire, a completely burning desire. We learn this from Dhruva Maharaj. It takes great determination. Those parts are more in our part. It takes going to him, taking our steps to him. That's also in our part. And then, okay, Krishna, I presented my case to you. Okay. Now it's Kesha turn. It's 1:30. Is it time for prasadam? 2:00. Are you hungry yet? You're not hungry? Why? Can't argue with that. Okay. Why don't we stop here? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur.